Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck. And what are we doing today on Unspun, Jody?
What do you think we're doing today on Unspun? The U.S. presidential debate is in the bag. And it depends on which news outlet you watch to see where the spin is. What do we think? We're going to chime in. We're going to talk about John Rustad laying down the law in his own mind about what should happen with people who suffer from addiction issues. More catch and release, dude. Oh, and there's that movie at the Vancouver International Film Festival that relates to people with addiction and forced rehab. We're getting to it.
Let's get into it.
Okay.
Okay, so we're recording early, everybody. I mean, it's Wednesday night. We're recording early because we got a crazy Thursday. We usually record on Thursday. So last night was the debate. So we're talking about the debate that happened last night. Today, I mean, you and I both watched it. I watched it with a big group of people, a lot of Democrat supporters. And, you know,
What was their reaction? Well,
they were yelling, a lot of yelling at the moderators, a lot of booing at Trump and a lot of yay for Kamala. And then today you see the reporting and it seems very, very weighted towards Kamala. I felt like basically Trump did what he does and I don't think he lost anything. I really don't. I think he just was what he was. He didn't gain anything. So the question is, did she get the mushy middle? Did she get it?
You don't think he lost?
He lost, but he didn't.
Okay. I just thought you said he lost. I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, he didn't win. But he didn't lose what we expect of him. Does that make sense? You know,
no.
He just did what he does. It's not going to lose his base.
See, I don't see it that way. He didn't do what he did. She owned him in a way, like non-politically, without talking about policy or whatever. He took every trap that she laid. Let's give credit where credit is due, because you've prepared people for debates.
Oh, yeah.
You know what it's like to run a political campaign. The amount of pressure on both of those people, mind you, I kind of feel like Donald Trump doesn't really get nervous because he just doesn't prepare. Like so I could see that Trump, this is my take on it, and you can correct me where you see fit.
Well, I think it's because this is all about spin. Let's talk about that. I mean, I think that
I'm talking about that.
Yeah, I think that's what's interesting, because that's what we're doing here. It's like not just a debate.
I'm gonna finish my thought. Yeah. Trump's people, Trump's actual handlers, the people, Tulsi Gabbard. Oh my God, she is probably hiding under a rock right now because she's the one that famously was preparing him for this debate. All they needed him to do was stick to the policies, stick to the border, immigration,
economy.
Fumbled the ball on every single one because she got him in his ego. Like watching it, I could see in the back of my mind the Trump team cringing. While the Harris team were probably doing very much with the people that you were in the room with. Now, what I found most interesting and the spin piece, and I'd like to see pundits and members of the media writ large address them saying that this woman could not possibly perform as she did at the Democratic National Convention without a teleprompter. There were no teleprompters. There were no notes. There was no script. There was no team. There was no earpiece. This woman, this leader, absolutely proved that all of the spin that's been going on for literally weeks was a whole hot steaming pile of garbage. It was. We haven't even talked about politics or policy yet. Abortion issue, immigration, Afghanistan, all the things. Healthcare. I have a concept.
Yeah, that was
good. Was his answer to that. You don't think that's a harsh fumble?
No. He never talks about anything. This is not a surprise.
But
he
that's
no
the
ideas.
Bar now. The bar now is lying through your
Trump.
Teeth.
He created the bar.
About
he lowered
dogs
it.
And
he lowered
no,
that bar years ago. He lowered that bar years ago.
No, but it's devolving, and he might actually win his way back into the Oval. So there's no like, well, that's just who he is. Because this is not normal. If we call it, it's weird, George. It's weird. I think that's the thing that will stick in spin land is just going, that was weird.
Well, from a spin point of view, setting aside winners and losers, to me, it was like, okay, I woke up, we ended the night, and Trump, first of all, went into the
Spin room.
Spin room.
They literally call it a spin room.
Spin room. And that's very unusual. He did it in 2016 during one of the debates. This was a big debate, and very unusual for the candidate to go into the spin room, which is its own, yeah. But of course, only talk to Fox. So in a main, you know, in a one-on-one, right. I don't even know if they were expecting that. Then,
they weren't.
But then you wake up, but we, I think we were shell-shocked as a group, because we were kind of talking about it, and people were, there was, you know, there was a conversation, but then we wake up this morning, and clearly, because I was, Trump's automatically last night saying he was, the adjudicator, the people were against him, the whole thing was weighted.
Moderators.
But the moderator, but he actually spoke for 43 minutes and she spoke for 37 minutes. So
he got the last word on almost every point.
He got the last word. He beat
every point.
So his argument about the moderators, he got the weight. He got six more minutes than she did. And that's what I was getting. I was getting mad. Like, this is not, I was actually mad at the moderators for giving him too much. So my perception during the debate was he was getting too much weight. He was giving, they were giving way too, being way too easy on him,
yeah.
letting him power through this. But yeah, did he speak too much, and did he take all these things, and then that comment, I mean, there was lots of reasons he just didn't do what he needed to do, which is basically just say, you're just Biden in a different, you know, clothing, you're just, that's, you know, and I am the economy, I am immigration, you are not. That's all he had to say for the whole 40, you know, 90 minutes. But he didn't, he went
I
off,
loved,
you're right, the I'm sure the entire team behind the scenes for him are going,
they were just like, oh my God,
he didn't do anything we told him.
You know what I really enjoyed though? And this is something that you and I, with our promotions background on my way into television and radio, and you are so in like a mile wide and 10 miles deep in all of this, that I don't even know how to, the reaction. She knew her mic would be off. And she knew that he was going to go off because she was setting the traps. And it's like, it was 3 minutes in, I think. She got her first statement out. You could feel tightness in her voice, but 100 million people are watching. I'd be tight too. Mm-hmm. And then he started, and then she laid a trap and he took the bait. And then she did this.
Yeah.
And then she went. And then she went. Like, she was talking to the people.
Yeah.
Without talking to the people. And I don't know if you ever watched the show that I just did a couple of seasons of, but oftentimes I wouldn't get a lot of opportunity to jump in. There was a lot of talking at the other side, which is fine. That's what we were doing. But I would look to the camera and I would be like, right? And I would have people say,
wall?
Oh,
was it
when you
wall?
Look at the, right?
Yeah.
But they would say, when you look at the camera, I know exactly what you're thinking. And I'm like, do you? That's
no.
Great.
Norman Fell, Three's Company, used to do it all the time.
Oh my God.
Mr. Roper used to do break that fourth wall all the time. It wasn't
so
really
good.
Part of it.
So good.
So, okay.
I thought she did that masterfully as well. So she,
yeah, but
she had those things. Oh, I get it. I watched with an American woman. You're coming off as a dude who didn't Kamala Harris, and you're not going to give her props.
Excuse
me, Mr. Vice President. I'm speaking.
No. I think that what the biggest challenge they must have had was not to go the deplorables route, right? How do you don't go that far? Like being judging.
Sorry, are you taking it so only it's a woman thing?
No.
So she has to do what Hillary Clinton did two cycles ago?
No, because you have to be mocking. Or to do those facial expressions, you could take it so far, right? In any kind of
she did it brilliantly and perfectly.
She did.
That's
she
my point.
Off. But
that's
can you
my
imagine
point.
If one little mistake though, she could have taken it too far. So that's very,
but she
very.
Didn't.
No, I know. A fine line though. Fine line. That was good. She did a good job at not going too far.
Wow, that only took 4 minutes and 35 seconds. He did an unbelievable job. If that had been a dude, you'd been like, "Oh my God, hands down, he won."
I'm never lauding about anybody, Jody. You know me.
I know. Well,
style.
I'm calling you out
style.
On it because this
I'm judgmental
was,
about everything.
This was one of the greatest debate performances that I've ever seen in my life of watching debates. The pressure couldn't be higher. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the bar couldn't be lower for the competition. It used to be debates were about fighting about policy and economics and your beliefs in political systems. Like it used to be, it would get dirty, but at least it was rooted in actual things. When did you ever think you'd hear Hannibal Lecter and Haitians eating cats? in a presidential debate, like
in the Simpsons, where I heard it,
right? But where she goes, when she went, this is talk about extreme. I thought there was like this. Thank God someone said it out loud, right? Anyway, that's how I processed it. Sitting next to, as I said, a born and raised American woman who doesn't have cable, who came over to my house and booked me a week out and said, "Can I come to your house and watch the debate?" Because I said, "Absolutely." So we were like sitting in front of the TV eating nachos, and how it felt watching her watch it. She was viscerally relieved that there was an adult in the room because of how poorly Joe Biden presented in the last debate. Like, that was a gut punch to Americans. Like, this guy is going to go unchecked. He was going to win the election. You called that before. You're like, Trump's winning, get ready, which everybody was saying, right? They're not saying that now, but this is hugely important. We recorded ABC Post, CNN Post, MSNBC Post, and Fox News Post. And after the debate ended, we watched all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unbelievable.
I watched CNN and I watched ABC. Yeah, there was quite
a difference. What did you think of Fox?
Well, I it was challenging for me to be able to turn it over because I got yelled at all the time for turning it over. I said, why can't we, let's watch another perspective. But
there
was
a lot of
anger. And then you go to MSNBC, which is the polar end of opposite of Fox. Hey, here's a question. What, and this is a total spin thing. Taylor Swift comes out right immediately after, makes her announcement she's going to support Kamala. You think if Kamala had lost the debate, would that still have happened, or was that a win lose kind of situation? It took over the headlines no matter what, took away everything, all the heat from everybody, including Kamala to a certain degree, although in her favor. Do you think she would have done that if she'd lost the debate?
Are you asking me if I think? Okay, I do. I actually do.
Why?
Because I think it's strategic for Taylor Swift, because in the statement, if you read the whole thing, as opposed to just being like, I heard Taylor Swift endorsed the woman candidate with a cat photo, because all day long, the Trump team was posting cat memes. Like, it was really quite something on the day of such importance. They were literally posting AI cat memes. And speaking of AI, in the post that Taylor Swift put on social media, it referenced the fact that Trump had used artificial intelligence technologies to pretend that she had endorsed him. So on a moment where the stage is white hot, you have hundreds of millions of people who may not be Swifties, because she always has hundreds of millions of people watching her, but she had that whole audience. I think she did it with the okay from the Harris team. That would be my assumption. I obviously don't have an inside track to Taylor Swift or Kamala Harris, but my assumption would be that she cleared it. She's like, I'm going to right after, and I'm going to do it this way. Because it wasn't like I'm with her or Team Kamala or whatever, Taylor Swifties for Harris or whatever it might. She actually laid out the whys and how and signed it, childless cat lady. Like, she is really done with the narrative that is being put forward by two very powerful politicians in the United States. And I think it's, as a woman, I feel really strongly a sense of pride in what these women are doing, because both of them have had to work 10 times harder than any man to get to where they are today. And no man can understand that, but every woman can. And there are so many American women who maybe to their husbands or their partners are saying, oh yeah, Team Trump, MAGA all the way, and going to walk into a voting booth and pull the lever for the Democrats. Like Dick Cheney and Liz Cheney. What kind of upside down world are we in where Dick Cheney is endorsing Kamala Harris? The fact that that is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine that ever?
16 years ago, he was the hardest right on the Republican side you could find.
He's responsible for Fox News.
Yeah.
He is.
Amongst other things. Anyways, we got to get going and talk about some more local things.
Okay, fine.
I think a lot of people watched it. It was like, you got at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, if you were in Vancouver, the streets were empty. It was like we were going to watch the hockey game of the Olympics or something. It was crazy.
Right. Crazy. What did Amanda say? Before we move on, I need to know what our executive producer had to say about it.
I do think that obviously I grew up around, I talk about women in my life and strong women. And I think that, and I was in, there's several women, my son's girlfriend there and a few friends, there was like mostly women and half women, half men. And this is much more meaningful to them for sure. This whole process, and you feel it and you know it and you hear it, and as you were with me right there, to, you know, coming at me a little bit, it's a little like,
sorry,
that.
Sorry, I don't mean to. No, I get it.
That's what happened last night too.
It's visceral for women. Yeah, it's totally about our bodies. I get it, George. It's about our bodies at the end of the day. That abortion question was like, wow.
And you don't think that's going to, you know, if that happens, that's, you know, what happens down there can impact us. So
big time.
So I totally get that, and of course,
I know. You're a good man.
Respect it, but you know, it's also I'm also willing to debate, and so it got a bit heated. I'm not defending Trump, but I'm also stating my own personal experience of doing debates and what it must feel like, and to be calm like that, like for her to be that way, that's a masterful for sure. Because that was going to be her, and the way she went in to shake the hand at the beginning, very smart move, because you got to put yourself. You got to do something like that out of the gate to give yourself that confidence to be able to, because as you said, he doesn't care. He has no nerves.
One more thing that I need to ask you about, because you do PR and setup and branding and all of it. The fact that the Trump team insisted that she not stand on a ledge, or that the podiums weren't the same height, because she's 5'4" or 5'5" and he's 6'2". She looked taller the whole time. And she was dressed like a Supreme Court justice.
You like that?
I loved it.
Interesting.
I love that she made herself look tall on a, because looking at the stage, I'm like, this looks stupid. Like the ABC should have said, no, the podiums are going to be even, because that's how we do it.
Yeah. You
bunch of dum-dums.
But you like the fact that it was shorter.
I like the fact that she looked taller, because she came in like Kamala Harris.
No, it's telling interesting.
Him what her name is, shaking his hand, let's have a good debate. And she walked over to her podium and she looked presidential. She looked tall, even though they had made her.
I get it. Height is a real thing, but it's also you can exude height for sure. And I agree. I think that I was looking at those podiums going, wait, am I crazy? Yeah. Am I seeing, and they were different heights, and she just owned her height, but owned him on the height, if that makes sense.
She did. Okay, let's move to what you Rustad. Sent me this tweet.
Well, this press John release.
Rustad today.
Well, he wants to, people argue he wants to institutionalize people. We've talked about this before. This inability to put people into institutions. I think
there are none.
Week.
Yeah.
Well, they closed them all down. And it federally have made it very, very challenging to put people away because of late regulations. And so he's saying he's going to find a way to do this. I think he'd get challenged in the Supreme Court by all the groups that don't want this to happen. And there are a lot of them. But it's something that politically is a smart move, I'd say, because I think that's the wave of the movement that is happening in this province.
Oh, there's a lot of people that will agree with this, even though it can't happen because people have rights here. John Rustad announces support for involuntary treatment for those suffering from severe addictions. Quote, people of all ages are being abandoned to their addictions, left to suffer and die while this government hands out drug supplies instead of real help. The conservatives will bring in compassionate intervention legislation. All of those were capitalized, by the way, CIL, to ensure those at risk receive the necessary care even when they cannot seek it themselves. That's John Rustad. So the stats are very, very clear on rehab. And there are a couple of recovered, I don't even know what the proper term is now, for Guy Felicella when he talks about it. He's a drug advocate. He's trying to help people who suffer from addiction. He is a recovered heroin addict. Mm-hmm. And Guy will tell you that he went into rehab 12 times before it actually worked.
Yeah. it's you know, and then you it's crazy. I mean, the fact that even if the conservatives win federally and they say they want to change this regulation, they can't. It's just when we go through the Supreme Court, it's just not going to fly. You can't stick people in prison, institutionalized crazy places for like reviews of the past. You can't do it anymore.
And you so, can't.
You know, and if the both conservative governments say they want to, they still can't. So what do you do? And so I can talk about this movie in a minute because it's more, and I think you had something else happened yesterday about you mentioned before the show.
My dog alarm just went off. Somebody knocked at my door.
Oh, I can't hear it.
Okay, great. No, so I'm going to keep talking through this. Yeah. Sorry. I'll keep talking through it here. Something happened in the last couple of days, downtown Vancouver. A young woman was grabbed at knife point, hauled into an alleyway. Two bystanders, thank goodness, this is day before yesterday now, it doesn't matter, but two bystanders see this happen and jump to her rescue, which I believe, George, is quite rare in today's world, because you might actually be the dead hero in this story with how crazy and chaotic things escalate to, it seems. Yep. So this guy gets wrestled to the ground by these two heroes. This woman who was taken at knife point into an alley is now standing there. Cops come. They find his car full of weapons. He gets arrested and put into holding until Crown Counsel can approve charges. He's released. We should just trust that this man is going to, you know, show up for his hearing, because he seems super rational with a car full of weapons grabbing a woman downtown at knife point. What?
And this is one week after the machete attack, a guy with 60 convictions. It's catch and release. And so it's the same issue, right? We have this system that I don't know if there's a way to fix the system. You have to fix the problem and those things won't happen anymore.
So how do we fix that problem, George? Like, what is it going to take? We have the Alan Schoenborns of the world are changing their names and they're allowed to not, as they're already out on passes. We've got the Hopleys who like kidnapped young boys and held them, but gave them back up because he was too cold and hungry or whatever. Like, there's just these unbelievable stories of repeat offenders, dangerous repeat offenders. What is it in our laws that is stopping this? And do you really believe, as a man who leans conservative, do you believe that a change in government will change this?
No, because it's it's a process. And so I went to this movie two nights ago called Pandora. Right. It's part of the Vancouver Film Festival. It's done locally. And it follows this woman in Victoria who's basically started a one-person nonprofit. I think she's a nurse. You know, that's what she does. She's a former heroin addict, 24 years sober, clean. She started this one-person nonprofit. She goes down, always with somebody else, to all those tents that are on Pandora. If you've been to Victoria, there are a lot of them. It's very much like Hastings Street in Vancouver, if you've been there, or any area, most parts of our province. And she literally goes and she says, I get to know who's down there. I talk to them. I have conversations. And I try to find out if they want help. And so because I now have a nonprofit, she says, I can do all the paperwork and I can take them to the places and I can do all this.
Right.
And they follow her and this one person that is going through this process. But one of the things, and I can't remember if it's in the movie where she talks, because there was a Q&A with her afterwards. And she's very vocal. Well, she went a bit political, I thought, because I believe it. This is not a NDP or conservative or social credit or BC liberal. This is a multiple different levels of government, and different governments of different spectrum have made decisions that have made the situation in multiple countries of where
it's a perfect storm in a global level, for sure.
Exactly. So you have, and so her issue is, you can't get a person off drugs unless they have housing, and you can't have a person move into housing if they aren't off drugs. So you have to do both simultaneously. You have to do it all at once. The rehab, the drug, getting them off the drugs, the housing, the in-place, the detox, detox, rehab, home. And there's the dry home versus wet home. For those who don't understand that, dry home is where there's zero tolerance. You move in there, you do drugs, you're out.
You're out.
Wet ones are the ones where you know those hotels,
methadone,
they're just doing crack and everything, and they're just chaos, right? You can't move a person who's just gone through 9 months of rehab back into what, which is what's happening right now. And of course, within a week, they're back on the drugs. So you have to have all of these things in place. She has saved, got 16 people on her own in the last 8 months into their own homes, a dry home through rehab. Already in 6 months, she's got 16 people off that one street. And what's interesting, what she said, when I go down there, and I go down there almost every day, and pretty much I do this for free. I just do this because I see the problem. And I'm always the only person, worker down there trying to help. I'm like, what? You're in Victoria, downtown Victoria, multiple different agencies. You know, she's
hyper critical of the millions of dollars.
And, you know, the problem is that it's once she hires one person, suddenly she has to have systems and procedures and check-in balances and all these things. So it's almost like,
oh, the 14th of every month, she needs to go to her bank to do a payroll slip.
Yeah, all these things. And she needs to make sure this person is vetted, all this stuff. Yeah. So it's almost better. One person, nonprofit, go do your thing. She said a doctor, but you have to actually literally hold their hand, walk them to the possum, take, and this is what she was doing, taking to the person to the hospital, getting them fighting with the doctors because they're
advocating.
Because they're people that are drug addicts. They obviously, nobody wants them in the hospital because they create havoc. It's just the process, but it's the only process that exists to get these people off. So many of them want to get off the street. They try themselves. They don't try themselves. This is the problem. Say, oh, well, we've got all these foundations. Come on by and we'll take you off drugs. Like, they're not functioning to do that. She literally holds their hands and walks them into the places that they need to go to get the treatment or the housing or all the paperwork that needs to be done. She fills in the paperwork for them. She does this all on her own because they won't do it. And then she goes and she fights and advocates for them. And that's what we need to do.
Right. Don't we have an entire arm of government on the municipal, provincial, and federal levels that are responsible for doing that? Like when she's down there and says she sees nobody else, where are all those people? Are they sitting in their offices shuffling papers?
I guess so. And, you know, frankly, they must be disheartening them for a lot of them because they do sit there. They come in, they put them in hospital, they put them into drug rehab, and then they come out and they get put into wet residence, and then they get drug addict again. They six them back 12 times. I mean,
12 times?
You know, Guy Filicello, he was 12 times he went through the process because he probably got put back in a wet home and got addicted again. It's a cycle, and we are not dealing with it. Housing, of course, first, but by first, you can't just give them housing. You need to get them off the drugs, and the housing has to be dry. It has to be strict. There has to be rules. There has to be no zero tolerance. I have the two buildings right next to where I live in Yale Town. They're both built by a church group, both buildings, about 115 units, dry homes, zero tolerance. We have, sometimes there's an issue there.
But sometimes they're an issue in regular residential areas. Like,
exactly.
It's like either addiction is a disease, not a character flaw. I think that's worthy of reminding people, because there are people that scream that this is a choice these people have made and they should just round them up and stick them in a spot. That's the part that bothers me, the round them up, the othering of people. Because if this was a bunch of people with cancer, we wouldn't be talking about it this way.
And
right?
It's not
this
a left or right issue of politics.
Too. No, no.
Just deal with it. You know the solution.
I just don't hear those solutions coming. And there are people who legitimately believe that a change in government will lead to this being fixed. And when you, as you very astutely point out, this is not unique to our province. This is not even unique to our country. This is a global phenomenon that has been exacerbated knowingly and actively by foreign governments that have allowed the movement of these highly crazy addictive drugs like fentanyl and carfentanil and beyond. We've always had a problem with cocaine and heroin and these street drugs that infiltrate and caused issues. Like, but there was a time when that was a rarity that you would see somebody tripping on something, and we would see it and as a society, and we would try and wrap our arms around it in some form or another, or help that person who might just be self-medicating something that is undiagnosed. Like,
it's not a character flaw. It's a new level of, to bring it back to Rustad. So he says he wants to do this and create these institutions and put these people into these places. Even if he could get away with that, if they go in there and they're in there for 9 months, they get cured of whatever their ailment is, their mental ailment is. Then they say, okay, you're welcome. You're free to go. You're cured. You're better. Your health care, your mental health care is all good now. They walk down the street. Where do they go? Back to the place they came from.
Back to their friends.
Back into their shit show.
Want some?
You know, wherever, and back on the drugs. And away we go again. So this is the problem. You can do that. You can talk about institutionalizing. But then what? When what? Where are they going to go? We don't have enough housing for my kids who can pay rent and are working. And what are we talking about here? This is insane. We're living, we talk about it. We know the solution.
How many episodes we've been talking about this since day one? We've been talking about it since day one. And it's so interesting because you've been talking about your kids. So you and I both have high school age sons, but we also have kids who are older. Blended families, et cetera, et cetera. So I have a 26-year-old stepdaughter and a 28-year-old stepson, as well as a 16-year-old. And my stepdaughter just recently found herself in need of a place to live. And you've talked about the basement suite, the thing, the roommates, the stuff, the searching, the whatever, like where, and it's like finding, I don't even know, like lightning in a bottle to find something that's even like livable.
Yep.
For affordable. It's unbelievable. So in the past week, I actually am going later on this evening to look at a place for her, and her budget is between $900 and $1,100 a month. It's a bedroom that maybe is shared with another human being who's a total stranger. I'm like, no. So then the me in my head, I'm like, well, how much is a studio apartment to purchase? What? Like, it's $600,000 to start for a 350 square foot room with no windows. It's like,
yep.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
George.
A friend just rented a place in exact, probably, I think the street you lived on in Kits, for a small one bedroom. And she's in her, you know, she's not a kid. So she can afford it, but $2,600 a month. Small one bedroom.
That was my mortgage. On my first house that I purchased, my mortgage.
My first mortgage was $700, and I can barely.
But mine was way later in life, though. You were way ahead of me in buying a place. I was like, this wasn't that long ago. I couldn't afford it.
Yeah, it's brutal. Anyway, yeah. So we'll see. Wow. We'll see the politics. We've got an election almost a month away here in BC, and probably a federal one. Who knows when?
Let's touch on that just briefly. That. Breaking of the agreement with the NDP and the reaction of the conservative leader federally, Pierre Poilievre, to Jagmeet Singh, saying he's ripping up this confidence agreement and yet not calling for an election. Like, that pissed off Poilievre big time. Yeah. But now, okay, I want, we didn't talk about this prior to, usually we have a little bit of like, okay, we're gonna do this. With the Air Canada strike, bonus George question, ding, 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 ding. With the Air Canada pilot strike looming, after what we just saw with rail in legislating back to work from the federal government, it's like, no, guys, we cannot do this. What do you think the Liberal government might do if the pilots go on strike? Do they say, you know what, binding arbitration, you have to do it? Like, what?
Well, I think they'll be locked out, but it'll probably last a day. I mean, the WestJet said, 2 days?
Yeah.
One day? They just want WestJet.
This is all spin, right? Yeah. I'll have what they're having.
But the rail thing—that's a whole that thing is that shuts down the country.
We talked about that.
Yeah, that's huge when rail shuts down. So airlines, it's an inconvenience, but you don't get your Amazon package. Maybe I don't know. I mean, Pierce is doing his tour to Montreal with his band. Another band he's in called Passion Mango, and they're touring Toronto and Montreal. They're flying on the 19th. They're flying the day before the strike, so they might make it. It's like
good times.
Yeah.
Just before we go, actually, we'll do this first. Your social media, you are easy to find. You are George_Affleck. I'm at Jody Vance, and as we do Unspun, and we're heading into U.S. election and provincial election, possible federal election, I think it's really important to point out, as we have these spicy conversations, I really appreciate that we can have that and you're not offended and I'm not offended. So when people listen to us go, bah, burr, at the end of it, we can go, you know what? Yeah. Right. I appreciate you.
Ah, back at you.
I do.
Back at you.
I think it's important.
So we even find time when we don't have time to do this because we like doing it so much.
Oh my God. It was like, what about now? What about
this
now?
Week was very brutal, like finding that window to do this.
Fun fact, George's mouth is half frozen from the dentist right now. This is what we're doing.
True.
Anyways,
true.
I do. I adore you. And you are a huge supporter of women. I get very passionate about it. I talk about it. I get edgy, but I love you. And I think it's really important when people watch or listen to our podcast, they need to take this vibe to their kitchen table, have a spicy conversation, and still really admire and appreciate the person that might have a differing opinion. What a concept.
Feel free to yell at us at your TV or radio or however you watch us.
Okay, see you, George.
Bye.
Bye.